Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Jeremy LeFevre. I'm a state representative in Kansas City representing parts of Waldo, Brookside, Ward Parkway area, and South Kansas City.
Excellent. We're glad you're here. Let's get started.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. Welcome to the production studio here at KCUR 89.3. No donuts this week. It's fun drive time here at KCUR, so it's dumplings in the green room, and we're enjoying those along with the coffee and the people we have here with us, including Representative Jeremy LeFevre. Also, our guest, Meredith Adams. She lives in Kansas City, Missouri. She's an administrative assistant for a nonprofit. Welcome to you, Meredith.
Thank you for having me.
And also KCUR's Cody Newell, our weekend newscaster and reporter. Welcome to you, Cody.
Always great to be here.
It's good to have you here. So, Jeremy LeFevre, you have listened to the show, we are told, so I know that you know that the first thing we're going to ask you is to tell us a little about your kids and your pets so we can get to know you.
My favorite topic. I have two wonderful children. I have two daughters. I have Isabel and Caroline. Isabel is almost four, and Caroline is at that very fun one-and-a-half-year-old age where she understands a lot but can't yet talk, and I can only imagine how frustrating it is for her, given how frustrating it is for her mother and me.
Trying to figure out what it was is she would be saying.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So how did you get involved in politics in the first place, Jeremy?
My dad has been, and my mom were both politically active and involved. My dad worked for a number of governors in a lot of different states throughout the country. And it wasn't until sort of like most teenagers, I sort of pushed back against many things that their parents were involved and interested in. But something must have stuck or something must have sunk in, because it wasn't until sort of my later years in college when I was working for the American Red Cross and I started getting involved. We had a city appropriation, some money that we got from the city in Manhattan, Kansas, that I kind of got interested in public policy development. And then I went to work for the New Mexico legislature, and I got to see, you know, firsthand what it was like to create law and draft law. So a whole bunch of things just kind of fused together. And when Jason Kander, who held the seat before me, announced that he was running for Secretary of State, a number of people approached me and said, you know, this might be something that you would be interested in. And I thought that it would be something that I would be good at and that I would enjoy. And it turns out I think I'm right on the I enjoy part. And so far the voters have agreed with me that I'm pretty good at it, too.
That's right. You've been there 3 years, right?
Yeah.
All right. Going on four.
Right.
Well, we have lots to talk about. Things in the General Assembly have been pretty busy these last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Now the run coming up to the next session. But before I get to my questions, let's start with our guests around the table. Meredith Adams, what's on your mind?
Well, I was kind of curious about, I know you've probably heard a lot from constituents and citizens recently. What is a concern that they voiced? Maybe one that we haven't really been hearing about as much. And, you know, what could we do as citizens or people of the community that will help in a way that maybe the government can't reach?
Those are two great questions. I'll take the first one because I think it's probably going to be the hardest for me to answer first. You know, I'm really fortunate. In my legislative district, it tends to be fairly high income, affluent. And so when I hear from my colleagues about issues that their constituents have, needs that they have from the government, I don't get as much of that. Most of the things I get from constituents are, you know, they're very passionate about public education. They're pretty passionate about a lot of the wedge or social justice sorts of issues, things that are fairly predictable. One of the big ones that has come up recently has been the issues of Planned Parenthood and Columbia, and sort of the tact that the legislature or some in the legislature have taken to restrict academic freedom and scientific research. And I think that's very scary. I don't think a lot of people in Kansas City are tuned into it as much right now because it's predominantly a Columbia thing. But I think as these hearings are shaping up into next legislative session, I think you're going to see a lot of things out of some special interest groups to restrict scientific research. The impact that could have on University of Missouri, Kansas City, but also the impact it could have on the Stowers Institute, our entire ability. We talk about this area being the animal health corridor. Well, I cannot imagine a researcher wanting to uproot their research and move here, being afraid that in 4 years some politician is going to get a wild hair and decide to take it over.
Yeah, is that getting worse, do you think? I mean, in your view, worse. It seems like that's been a topic of discussion now for at least the last decade that I've been paying attention to the Missouri General Assembly, the conflict between scientific research that some legislators find questionable or that involves, at one point, stem cells or embryos. These sorts of questions have been going on a long time. Is it worse now?
I believe so. In the last couple weeks, or in the last year, we saw the legislature, Kurt Schaefer specifically, conduct hearings to basically attack the University of Missouri system for giving refer privileges to a physician to perform medicinal abortions. And now the university caved to that and has suspended that doctor's privileges and has cut off all grants and ties with Planned Parenthood. Missouri Right to Life and others are feeling emboldened, and they need to get their next fresh victim, I guess. And their latest strategy that they've announced is going after a specific scientific research team at the University of Missouri system that does some groundbreaking scientific medical research. And if we were to lose them, I think the University of Missouri system would lose its AAU membership. A higher education system is the economic engine for a state. Certainly the University of Missouri system is really the one that we've got. And with major damage done to that, I think it could spell disaster for our state significantly.
Some pretty strong language. I mean, there are a lot of people who were concerned about Planned Parenthood in recent months.
Mm-hmm.
After those videos emerged that appeared to show a Planned Parenthood official talking rather casually about the use of organs from aborted fetuses. There's been lots of concerns, and some of it even across the aisle.
Yeah, and I think that those concerns are separate and very, very different from the kinds of procedures that were occurring at a surgical center in Columbia, Missouri, and are completely different from conducting scientific life-saving research. If you're pro-life, you ought to be for life-saving medical research. And so this is taking us to a whole new level.
Cody Newell, what's on your mind today?
One thing I'm curious about is, you know, you've been in the legislature for 3 years now, and I'm wondering, when you went in, you know, what were kind of your expectations for it, and how has that sort of changed as you've been in the legislature and kind of seen these things go on?
Yeah, I think I was even involved a little bit in politics. I worked down in Jefferson City before I got there, and so I thought I had even better than most, probably a great understanding. And so I thought, all right, I'm going to head down there, and I'm a Democrat, and there's all these other Democrats, and we're going to band together, and we're going to be Democrats together, and we're going to go team, right? When you get down there, the easy fights are Democrat-Republican, because they've got an R on their name, and they sit over there, and you know who they are, and you know where they're coming from. There are more internal intra-party political fights than there are partisan fights, by far. They're nastier. They occur under the system of what people normally say. I mean, they occur in blogs and comment sections, and it's really that has been the most surprising and, I'll say, disappointing aspect of political life so far.
Really? Huh.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of that? I mean, what do you and your fellow Democrats fight about in comment sections and blogs and under the surface?
We don't fight about a lot of policies. You know, when there's a small number of Democrats, it's a pretty small pond, and there can only be so many big fish. And so when people want to be the leader of Kansas City Democrats or Democrats, whatever, it's there can only be so many people that are at the top and that are in charge. And so, and because we've got term limits and the way things work in our state, there's this constant jockeying for leadership positions, because even the top leadership position leaves every 2-3 years. And so then there's all this trickle down. And so it's constant moving, and it's constant political fighting, generally over nothing. I mean, we're not fighting about women's health care. We're not fighting over education. We agree about all of that stuff. And that's the other problem sometimes with primaries is, when I'm going up against an opponent where we both believe in marriage equality, we both believe in choice, we both believe in public education and unions and all these other things, what else are we going to fight about other than, you know, he's lived here less than I have, and he said this on a blog 3 years ago, and it becomes really nasty stuff like that.
Wow, that's a little more surprising. That sort of surprises me. I would have thought that, you know, because you are so unified in terms of, you know, policy, that it would maybe be less, you know, at each other's throats, especially with, you know, Republican supermajorities, you know, focusing on things like right to work and really focusing on kind of hammering home these issues that, you know, go against the Democratic Party.
And now, I think that this is not unique to the Democratic Party. If I were to have a Republican colleague in here, I mean, the fights that are going on within the Republican Party caucus right now are so much more intense than what's going on even within the Democratic Party, especially after the big right to work veto override, where you've got, you know, Republicans splitting with their caucus over actual votes. That gets – we saw that play out in the auditors situation. Certainly bullying, intra-party bullying was cited as perhaps one of the reasons for his death.
From Auditor Tom Schweik. Who took his own life. I guess I'm curious, Jeremy, how this fits into kind of a broader picture about the culture of things in Jefferson City. We've talked about that a lot on this podcast. Every person who sits in that chair says there's a problem. Every person who has come in here has said something needs to change, something needs to address a variety of issues, whether the concern be about campaign financing and the ethical questions that arise as a result of the limitless contributions that people can make in Missouri, or more cultural concerns, the culture of harassment that's been reported of interns and other women, actually, at the state capitol. What do you make of that? You've been around there now 3 going on 4 years. You have had a chance to observe things. What's at the root cause of some of the problems, and do you see hope for changing any of that?
Well, I think people are at the root cause of most problems. I mean, human institutions have human elements. The issues that we're seeing in Missouri are not unique to Missouri. I've worked, like I said, in New Mexico, and I've worked in Kansas, and they're not unique. There are some things that I think are catalysts for speeding up that reaction or speeding up, you know, what we're seeing. And I think a couple different things. On the side of the culture and sort of the harassment issues we've seen, I don't know that this will be a popular stance to take, but I almost say that I think what has come about in the last year or so is evidence of progress, because we know that this behavior has been going on for decades. Huh. Claire McCaskill writes about it in her book, and it has been going on many, many times before. Sarah Feltz, who was in this station, I think, before talking to Steve Kraske about the situation, was an intern in 2008. It's been going on for a long, long time. Finally, we're seeing perhaps a culture that's at least accepting enough to support people when they come out and say, this is happening and this is wrong. We're not there yet. But I think we're getting to the point where I at least feel like, you know, Taylor, one of the interns, is a friend of mine. She was a friend of mine when she was an intern. She's still a friend of mine now. I would have hoped that Taylor would have felt like she could come to me and talk to me about something that's going on. But I think that as time goes on, more and more of that culture of being able to have people come in and feel like it's safe to report something, I think that's changing.
Meredith, you hear these things as a young adult woman yourself. What do you think when you hear about these things?
I mean, I'm glad to hear that people are stopping putting up with it. You know, it's something that goes on quite often. I've experienced, you know, my own situations with sexism, but it's nice to see that people are starting to be able to come out and say that they've had this happen to them or that they've seen this happen and it's being met with people that are on their team.
People willing to hold folks accountable.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And that has been missing for our system for a while. And that goes back to, I think, the first part of the question in terms of accountability within our system. Unlimited campaign contributions are absolutely, I mean, that is the number one reason why our political system in Missouri is the way it is. You couple that with term limits, and then couple that with just what goes on in every capital, unfortunately, or any system. I think you combine those things together, and you get a really dangerous system like we've got now. With term limits, there's no way to keep the good people. And there are good people. There are a lot of good people. I like to think of myself as one of the good people. But there's no way to keep me in the House of Representatives. After 8 years, I'm done. So you can guarantee we'll get rid of the bad people, but there's no way to keep any of the good ones. And when you've got 163 state representatives, how many phenomenal, great public servants can you have that churn through every, and with term limits, we're really seeing folks stick around for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so there's no way to keep the good ones who have an institutional knowledge. Couple that with tons of cash infused into these races.
Yeah, I don't. You know, cash is an interesting question. We had T.J. Barry, one of your colleagues,
good friend of mine
from the Republican side. He was in here a couple of weeks ago and said, "You know, I'm not opposed to unlimited cash contributions as long as they're reported, and they all are under Missouri law. You have to report every nickel you receive." Mm-hmm. He says, "My constituents can hold me accountable by not reelecting me. As long as I report the money, I should be able to take as much as I want." What's wrong with that?
I think philosophically, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And if I were reading that in a textbook, that would be great. But here in the real world, and I would say this to TJ if he were sitting right here, but here in reality, the fact of the matter is the constituents, if they're going to vote you out, have to have somebody else to vote for to vote you out. And if you're sitting on $120,000 of cash and they're unhappy with you, we also have term limits. So I just have to wait TJ out, and then I can run. So there's no real reason for me to challenge TJ or challenge anybody else, because they can go and get a $10,000 check or a $20,000 check, where somebody trying to challenge an incumbent is getting $25, $50 checks. I mean, there's no way to compete against that. And why would you want to? If you really want to be state rep, don't run against somebody who's going to trash your name spending $120,000 to do it. Just wait them out another 4 or 6 years, and then you can run, and then you're the person.
So would you like to see changes in how term limits work then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd like to see them done away with. I don't think you can do that in the state. But I sit on one of the committees that looks at it every year. And one of there's a ton of proposals that come forth, but the one that I really like, except for just doing away with them completely, allows you to do 16 years either in the House or the Senate, one or the other. You can do 16 total years, just like you can now, but you could do 16 years in the House or 16 years in the Senate. I still think the best term limit is an election, and if somebody shouldn't come back, then vote for somebody else.
Well, what kind of things, you know, are our constituents saying to you? Because, you know, whenever I talk with people who are thinking about, you know, these kind of issues on the state level in Kansas City, it seems like there is this sort of idea that we're not really listened to in Jefferson City, that Kansas City and St. Louis are both kind of just, you know, brushed off. You know, do people have that sense?
I don't know if voters have that sense or not, sure. Or if constituents have that sense. I think largely when they're talking to me, it's, you know, it's about something very specific, you know, and quite honestly, a lot of the times it's something to do with the city or, you know, something like that. I personally don't share that feeling, and so I'm not sure that. I think St. Louis gets an awful lot of attention. I think Kansas City is on the rise. I think largely what people are feeling right now is sort of so much momentum is behind Kansas City, and the great things that we're doing are sort of unified, united leadership between city, state, county, as well as Republican and Democrat. I mean, TJ, who you mentioned, mm-hmm. And I are really good friends, and we work well together. And we're not seeing as much of that on the eastern side of the state. And so I think people are a little bit frustrated that Kansas City hasn't come to the forefront anymore.
So what do you do when the General Assembly isn't in session?
A lot of time, I spend a lot of time being a dad. Okay. That's my favorite thing. I love my kids. They're the best thing in my world. But then I do a little freelance photography on the side. I do some weddings and families, and then a bunch of commercial work. And so I work for a photography studio outside of or out of Lee's Summit, and so I do some pictures.
Excellent. If you were not in politics, would you be doing that sort of thing full time, or would you want to go to law school? Would you want to go do something else?
I thought about law school for a long time. I took the LSAT and was getting ready to do that. And then I met a girl, and I bought her a ring, and then we had two children. And now I got two kids that I have to put through grade school, high school, college. So law school may be out of the picture. But art is something that I really do enjoy. My wife and I used to do pottery together, and so I love to throw pottery on the wheel and paint and take pictures. So I think if I could do anything, it would be an artist.
It strikes me that that's a more urbane answer than I think most representatives would be able to give to that question. You don't sound like you're all about the ambition climbing the ladder thing.
My dad told me a long time ago, because he would get fired every 4 years. And
all right.
And, you know, I was asking him about that, and he said, you know, I have a lot of friends of mine. He kind of grew up in the generation where he worked for somebody for 20 years, who they would always ask him about that. And he said, I have found that if you focus on doing the very best job at whatever job that you're doing right now, that you will find a home later on. Talent finds a home. And, I think I was more ambitious also before I had kids. I still love to work. I love my job, and I really enjoy working. But before I had kids, I was, you know, I would be in the office at 6 and come home at 9, and I thrived on it. I loved all of that. And with kids, it has definitely changed sort of my outlook on why I work and when I work. And so I probably have less ambition, political ambition, now than I did 4 years ago.
That's interesting. Kids will do that, I guess.
They will.
Meredith, what else is on your mind?
Are you aware of any maybe like untapped resources or organizations or initiatives that we're not aware of? I kind of feel like there's oftentimes things happening in Kansas City that are really great that maybe other citizens don't know about.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many awesome things happening in our city. I try to focus my policy passion on children and families. And so one group that I have been involved with for the last 8 years before I got elected is the Kansas City Child Abuse Roundtable. And it's a coalition of 50 to 100 agencies that work with children and youth in Kansas City. It's sort of facilitated and run by a woman named Debbie Howland. And they get together once a quarter and talk about all things child abuse and neglect. They bring in people from Jefferson City, the budget folks, to come in and talk about those sorts of things. And so that's a group that I think is doing a lot of really awesome things in Kansas City to coordinate and communicate with one another. I get calls from my St. Louis colleagues all the time. They hear about this group, and they just can't believe that 75 people from a city can all get in a room 4 times a year, get along, swim, or 6 times a year, because we do it every other month, and just get along great and really produce great things.
So let me take us back to Jefferson City for one more question here. We've just come through the veto override session at the end of the year. The Democrats didn't really fare very well. The right to work issue, the Republicans were unable to override the governor's veto, but on pretty much every other major piece of legislation that Governor Nixon vetoed, the Republicans were able to use their supermajority and override that veto, both in the House and the Senate. What do you think the future looks like for Democrats in Missouri? This has not been a successful year from a legislative standpoint, and the districts aren't going to change before the next several elections. What are the hopes, the fears of you as a Democrat in Missouri looking ahead?
Well, I don't think it's just been the last year. I think if you look at, you know, the party legislatively since 08 really has taken a nosedive. I think we are starting to get a little bit better organized. I think after the next gubernatorial election, I think we'll see a little clearer leadership at the top, and there will be a better understanding of who's driving the ship and what the expectations are down the line. Right now, it feels like, you know, some people say, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. Well, I'm not sure that there's any cooks in our kitchen right now. And so I'm looking forward to some changes, hopefully, when 2016 comes around. You know,
is that a criticism of Governor Nixon? Is that you're saying he's not giving leadership?
I don't know that I wanted to criticize Governor Nixon. I think that Governor Koster will provide some really strong leadership for our party. I think he already has, but you know, with the Attorney General and Senator McCaskill, I mean they both work exceptionally well together and are good friends, and you know, provide good leadership. But there's still two of them, and it's hard to know who's calling what shots, when and where. And I'm not sure either one, because neither one of them wants to step on the other one's toes either. You know. So I think once 2016 comes around and there's Governor Koster is leading our party, I think we'll see us ramp up and be better prepared for the 2010 the 2020 redraw. In terms of electoral outcomes in 16, Missouri Democrats always do great in a presidential election because we bring out folks from that normally don't come out and vote. And so I think you'll see us pick up a few seats. I don't think we'll get below the supermajority realm. It kind of depends on how many of the Republicans take each other out in primaries because of this right-to-work vote. But I think you'll see good things out of us in 16. And then I think with some leadership, I think we'll perform well in 18 and send us into the redraw in 2020 in a good position.
That's actually interesting, thinking about 2016 and about, you know, I guess, kind of values and issues that matter to Democrats in terms of, like, initiative petitions. There's, you know, some kind of buzz going around that there's going to be some sort of legalization of either recreational or medical marijuana, and then, of course, minimum wage initiatives. Do you think that those are going to move forward and have a lot of support?
Gosh, I hope they do. Not only do I think many of those ideas are good, I think that they also bring out Democratic support. And I think that's good for a couple of reasons. One, I'm a Democrat, so I think Democrats coming out to vote is a good thing. But I also think that what you see is that inspires people to come out and vote on specific issues and they get engaged. Sometimes it's hard to get engaged or inspired about a Jeremy LaFavor. I mean, who's that guy? He's got two kids and seems like a nice enough guy. But when I can touch, feel, taste, and smell minimum wage, legalization, raise your hand for kids, all the great ballot initiatives that could come on the ballot, it engages people and energizes them to come out to vote. And I think that that's a great thing. One of the ones that I'm going to be working hard on is the Raise Your Hand for Kids initiative. That's a tobacco tax increase to help fund early childhood education in the state. And I think they may get some carve out for some health care funding. I think we're still looking at that. But that, I think, has the potential to be really great for our state.
Really? That do you think there's going to be a lot of support for that? Because Missouri, I don't think, is really typically known as a place that's very favorable in terms of raising tobacco taxes. We're pretty low.
Well, Missouri's the lowest. Yeah, Missouri's the lowest tobacco tax in the country. And there's, you know, we've tried to do it many times before, and there's back and forth about why that succeeds or doesn't succeed. I think this one is much more narrow, and I think sometimes people are leery of taxes or these dedicated revenues that try to do too much, right, and they don't believe that they'll accomplish it. I think with a very narrow focus and specifically providing universal voluntary access to pre-kindergarten is something that will do exceptionally well. There's a couple other initiatives out there, and I think it'll depend on as those kind of fall away. There's one about higher ed, and then there's the tobacco companies have put theirs forward to compete with it as well. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Meredith Adams, last question.
Oh, gosh. I'm glad you brought up early childhood education. What can we do to help bring that to the forefront in people's minds in our in our government's minds.
Yeah. You know, the best thing for kids is interactions with their parents. And so there's a lot that people can do to help this or help that. But what you can do is you can read to your kids. And if you don't have kids, you can find a kid and read to them. It's the easiest thing. In my neighborhood, there are, you know, or put up a little free library somewhere. But the foundational building block to lifelong learning is being able to read. And so Turn the Page KC is a group that we can get involved with. But it doesn't even have to be so formal or intimidating as like signing up to volunteer. We all know a kid. Find a kid, grab a book, and sit down for 10 minutes.
You going to sponsor any legislation in the next session?
Lots of it. All good bills.
Give me your number one priority.
My number one priority is going to be Medicaid expansion. That continues to be a top priority. I don't want people to lose sight of that. It seems like last year it didn't get as much of the conversation as I would have liked. It is the top jobs program for our state. It is the right thing to do. It's the smart thing to do. And we need to keep beating that drum. So Medicaid expansion is going to be number one.
I feel like if there's going to be tons of bills, I guess I want to know what your lowest priority that you're going to sponsor
was. Was my lowest priority.
Declare a new state flower or something. Yeah.
You know, I've never done one of those. I remember when I was in fourth grade, and I grew up in Montana, and there were some kids from Anaconda got their state rep to like introduce a bill to move the capital to Anaconda, and our fourth grade class wanted to make sure that the state capital stayed in Helena, Montana, and so they had hearings on it and everything. We went back and forth. I learned so much. I mean, I remember that to this day. And so when people talk about like, oh, how can they spend time on the state mushroom or the state dog or the state exercise? Well, it's not some state representative who got elected and said, state flower. That's going to be my number one. It's a fourth grade class, because in fourth grade in Missouri, you learn about government and civics. These classes come to their state reps and say, our class has held a debate and we formed a type of government and they had a vote and they voted that they wanted the state flower, the state jumping jack, or the state whatever, and they want you to push this forward. And so the legislator, some of them do it, some of them don't. I've never had a group do it. If I had a group come to me with that, I would take it to the moon.
That was an open invitation.
Open
listeners.
Invite. Come
challenge
on down.
Accepted.
Because the kids come to the Capitol. They elect somebody to come and testify. And then they get to see, you know, we have a day where we debate them on the floor. And we actually engage in real debate about, I remember one day it was the state mushroom. And it took three days.
For me, that would be the mushroom, because I honestly don't know any others.
It took 3 days to get through the Senate. But it's fascinating for these kids to learn about government. It's one of the things that people like to joke about, and they think it's silly for the legislature, but I think it's one of the most important things that we do.
I hope that wasn't the only thing they did for those 3 days in the Senate. But
it
I
was. Unfortunately,
that's what I was afraid of.
Mushroom talk, real important.
Meredith Adams works for a nonprofit here in Kansas City. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also KCUR's Cody Newell. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks.
So, Jeremy, in an effort to get to know you just a little bit better, as always, we close the show by hearing your favorite song. What is it?
Blackbird by the Beatles.
Well, that was incredibly decisive.
Without a question.
Is there a reason you want to justify that choice?
The sort of intensity of the words coupled with the simplicity of the piano and sort of like I play guitar and some piano and stuff, and so I like music, but the powerfulness of the words and the simplicity of the song together, and then it's just really pretty.
Outstanding. Thank you so much for being here.
You bet. Good to be here.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. By the way, if you missed it, we had a special podcast-only edition, a roundup of the veto override session with Jason Hancock and Barb Shelley of The Star and KCUR's Ellie Moxley. Be sure to check that out online. If you use Twitter, it's a good way to keep track of us and keep track of the show. I'm at PTS Brian. You can follow my co-host, Sam Zeff, at Sam Zeff. We try to use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air every Tuesday morning. Up to Date gives us some space at 11 a.m. That's on KCUR 89.3. And don't forget, it's pledge drive time. You can show your support for the station by going to kcur.org. Finally, we really want you to come sit in the citizen chair where Meredith was today. Help us get to know elected leaders in Kansas and Missouri. If that's something you want to do, shoot me an email, brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll see you next time. Into the light of a dark black night.